Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1201, I guess it's a 1201. The topic is training and the title is Safe Ways to Create Greater Muscle Damage. Now, this is actually anybody trying to build new muscle, anybody trying to shape their muscle, you have to create muscle damage. You have to stress the crap out of the muscles in the training, and then that's going to elicit a change from them. Now, depending on the intensity, depending on the exercise selection, depending on the frequency, and all of that, depending on your nutrition, is kind of all interplays into whether you build new muscle tissue or whether you kind of keep the same muscle you have but change shape. I've even worked with people where we purposefully and intentionally took muscle off their body to reshape, and usually those were post-college sport females. If they were in a sport that required them to have kind of thicker legs so they could be explosive, be strong, or for whatever reason, and then after college they kind of didn't want that build, we took muscle off their legs. I've actually had pitchers that I've worked with where after their pitching career they wanted to build up their upper body, but their legs were super thick, so we kind of worked to rearrange their composition. So there has been times where I've actually worked intentionally to take muscle off of somebody, which is usually a little bit of an abnormal way of doing things. But if we're wanting to build muscle, let's assume that our nutrition is on point. Let's assume that in general your training is on point, but you're not seeing results. One of the reasons why could be that due to your strength or due to your body size, you're not able to create a very significant amount of muscular damage in your training. Meaning if the best you can do on lateral raises is, 12 pounds, 12 pounds pulling on the tissues of the shoulders isn't really a lot of damage. Like, it's not a lot of force. Likewise, I've talked before in a podcast where young lady was training at our gym and she was wanting to build a better bench press, and she was doing skull crushers, but the best she could do was 8-pound skull crushers. Well, 8 pounds pulling on the muscle tissue of your triceps isn't going to cause any damage whatsoever. So if somebody's on a little bit on the weaker side, or if somebody just has a small frame, if you weigh 115 pounds, no matter how strong you are for your weight, you still can't move a lot of weight. I was talking with a female who wanted to get better at bench pressing, and she's a powerlifter, and she feels like bench press was kind of like really holding her back. And we were talking about this concept. So I asked her if she ever did reverse band benching. Now, if you don't know what that is, you can pause the podcast and search on YouTube, Brutal Iron Gym Reverse Band Bench Press, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But in a sense, what it is you put bands. There are exercise bands that are pretty thick, I think like latex. I don't actually know what kind of material they are, but you can hang them on a squat rack, or like in our gym, we have a bench that's actually capable to do reverse band benching. I believe it's the only one in the world. My dad and I made it, but we actually set bands above where the bar is. The band loops off of like a peg or a bar or something. It goes underneath the barbell and comes back up to that anchor point. What happens then is when you bench, as you lower the weight, the bar stretches the band. So therefore the band takes more weight off of the barbell. So the barbell weighs less and less and less as the band is stretched and stretched and stretched. Now, how that's beneficial is typically in bench press, we can only like use the heaviest weight that we can manage right off of our chest. So when I unrack the bar, I'm actually holding less than I can do in that actual position. When I start to bend my elbows and say for the top half of the range of motion, I'm actually using less weight than I could do in that actual position. I have to only use the weight that I can get right off of my chest. Well, if you have bands helping, you can have an overload of weight at the lockout, like when you unrack. You can have an overload of weight at the top half of the range of motion. And then as it's lowering down towards your chest, the bands are taking more and more weight off to where at the bottom, it can be your normal typical weight load. But then as you start to press back up, as your position gets stronger, the weight would actually feel heavier. Let's say, for example, you put 200 pounds on the bar, and you're like, I can't bench 200 pounds. There's no way. Now, I've benched maybe 160 before, but if I want to bench more than 160, what you can do is with reverse band benching, you can unrack 200 pounds. As you bend your elbows, it goes from feeling like 200 to 190 to 180 to 170 to only 160 by the time it touches your chest. Now, if you normally can do 160 off your chest, all of a sudden you start to press it off your chest. As you get into a stronger position, it now weighs 170. As you get a little bit higher into a stronger position, it now goes back to weighing 180. As you get a little bit higher in a stronger position, it goes to 190. And then at your strongest position at lockout, it's back to weighing 200 pounds. So instead of the entire range of motion, the entire movement, only being able to weigh 160, you're actually able to have parts of the range of motion, parts of the movement, weighing above 160. And that gives you heavier weight load. That actually stresses the muscular tissue and the connective tissues, the supporting tissues, greater than just that constant weight held back to the weakest position. So doing a reverse band bench press allows someone over time in their training, instead of only being able to use 80 to 90% of your bench press for your typical technique work and regular volume, you can actually use 110 to 120% of your bench press for your regular technique work and volume. Over time, that builds much, much stronger muscles and connective tissues. And it also just builds confidence because you get used to feeling that weight when you unrack it. You get used to feeling the confidence to bend your elbows and start into the movement, even though it feels very heavy. So there's an enormous amount of mental benefit as well as physical benefit to doing reverse band benching, which is why my dad and I made that bench, why it was so damn important, because a lot of the females, a lot of the younger lifters and newer lifters, they were only able to train with 80 to 90% of their max. Their max wasn't very much. So we now train on a regular basis with 110 to 120% of their max, and everybody's progressing a lot faster. So if you have either size disadvantage or strength disadvantage or whatever the reason is, if you're unable to use overloading amounts, like overloaded above the muscle kind of normal capacity, the joint capacity, the stabilization capacity, if you're not able to use significant amounts, you won't be able to reach significant muscle damage. So what I wanted to talk about today was, how can you do that? How can you create greater muscle damage even if you can't move very heavy weights? And another way I kind of want to throw this out there real quick is, let's say in your training, you trained pretty aggressively. You train what you believe to be a pretty good program, but you're almost never sore. And you don't really see any growth. You've been trying to train harder, but you can't really figure it out. You've been trying to eat more, but if you eat too much more, you just get fat rather than bigger muscles. So these techniques work really well if somebody feels in this way. Like, I'm training all the time, I'm never really super sore, I'm eating as much as I can, I just can't seem to get my body to convert it over to muscle tissue. On the contrast is, if you're always beat up from your training and you're super sore, and maybe every once in a while your elbow kind of bothers you, don't do any of the things I'm about to tell you because your body's still struggling to recover. So these are techniques that if somebody has the like room to recover more from more, they can damage things more and still be able to recover. But if you're struggling to recover, don't try these things, okay? It's just going to push you further into muscle damage. So a couple ideas I wanted to write down and just kind of shoot through. Now, you can take some notes, and I would encourage you to do so. You can also reach out after the podcast to us at brutalirongym@gmail.com. And I don't have an elaborate outline for today. I didn't want to take the time to write all this out because it just takes too long. But at least it has, if you want, I'll send you the outline. It at least has these terms and words on it. And or if you want help, I can help you kind of format this stuff into your programming, and then you can kind of take with it and run with it on your own, but at least you know the help is available. So, a couple techniques and things we use. One of the things I use with my own training and clients' training and to address this issue is competitive circuits. So we're going to do exercise circuits where you do multiple exercises in a row. So we know this as circuits or supersets. You know, maybe if I do, typically I might do, like, say, a dumbbell chest press into a dumbbell one-arm row, and then I would take a break. So I might do 10 reps of chest press, immediately go grab a different dumbbell, you know, and do 10 reps of one-arm row on one arm, 10 reps of one-arm row on another arm, and then I might take a 2 or 3 minute rest. So a typical superset or a typical circuit is you do one exercise, right into another exercise, right into another one, and then you might take a longer break. Most often, circuits are set up to where they're what would be considered non-competitive. They're associated, but non-competitive. And what this means is I might do, if it's lower body, I might do something that's a hip hinge into something that's more of like a knee extension stress. So maybe I'll do like dumbbell RDL into a dumbbell goblet hold squat. So they both work the legs, but one works kind of the hip extension and the other one works knee extension. So they're similar, but they're not the exact same thing. Repeat it. Another example, you might do biceps and triceps. Maybe I do dumbbell skull crushers. I stand up and then do hammer curls with the same dumbbells. So you did something for triceps, something for biceps. They're associated. They're both the arms, but they're non-competitive, meaning one exercise doesn't pre-fatigue or weaken the other exercise. Another way of saying this would be is if I wanted to do calf raises between squats. Doing calf raises between squats doesn't take away from my ability to do squats, but it is associated with kind of like the lower body musculature. That would be a typical way people set up circuits and supersets is they're associated, but they're non-competitive. So instead, what we can do to create more damage is we can create competitive circuits, where you train the exact same muscle in slightly different ways, but you want to beat the living crap out of it. You know that the first movement is going to pre-fatigue and weaken the second movement, which is going to pre-fatigue and weaken the third movement. So often what we do is we start with a purely isolative movement, and then you go into an exercise that allows another muscle or two to help out, and then another exercise that allows another extra muscle or two to help out. So as example, let's say I'm doing bicep curls. Maybe I'm just doing like an easy curl bar bicep curl. So camera bar, whatever you call it. You're just doing standing bicep curls. You're doing them really strict. Maybe even have your like leaning back against a wall. Your feet are slightly out in front of you so you can't sway with your body. So you might do bicep curls to good form failure. And then what you can do is jump up on a pull-up bar with an underhand grip. And maybe you're going to jump to the top and try to hold that position as long as you possibly can. As your strength fatigues, you would start to lower and lower and lower, and the biceps would be flexing and flexing and flexing to try to hold you in place, but they would slowly be pulled open, pulled apart, even though they're trying to contract. That creates an enormous amount of muscle damage. So maybe you can hold your position for 5 seconds, and then you try to resist lowering down for another 5 seconds. And then you can jump back up, try it again. Maybe this time it's only 3 seconds and 3 seconds. Jump back up, and maybe this time it's just almost like a straight fall. So that's an example of just going like a back-to-back exercise. That's a competitive exercise. Doing bicep curls, which are just the biceps, jumping up into a like an underhanded grip pull-up, which is the biceps, but you also get the lats. You might also get, you know, the rhomboids to try to help. A couple other muscles might try to help. So with their help, the biceps still get beat up, but the biceps are able to dig deeper into muscular failure rather than just failing at that first exercise. Another example I used with a client was a 3-exercise example. Is we did machine abductors, which is the one where you push apart, not the one where you push inward. So it's for your hips. So you push outward against these knee pads, and that works your glutes. Then, but it's a pretty isolative exercise to the glutes. You're trying not to let anything else help. So we did machine abductors. We went right over in our gym, right behind the machine abductors is our glute drive, which is a machine version of a hip thrust. So then we did the hip thrust, which is the glutes again, but you do get to use the hamstrings a little bit. There's no way to kind of purely isolate the hamstrings out, but they do get to help a little bit. And then we went right into RDLs. Now, we have a machine next to our glute drive and abductor that can do RDLs. We also have dumbbells for doing RDLs. But we went into RDLs, which is, again, still glutes. You still have the hamstrings helping out a little bit, but now you actually get a little bit of lower back help as well. So the idea of it was to be glute isolative, then glute and hamstring, and then glute, hamstring, and lower back. So this allowed them over all three movements to destroy the glutes and push the glutes further and further and further into failure. So competitive circuits is a great way to create greater amount of muscle damage because you're doing the same damn muscle in a row, like boom, boom, boom in a row, but you're letting other muscles slowly help it a little bit so that way you drive that primary focused muscle further and further into muscular failure. So that's one example, and there's a million ways to set that up. Another example would be just kind of like a mechanical change to the movement, and that would be like reverse banding. We do that for bench press. We do that for deadlifts, for squats. I even do it on our Smith machine, whether I'm doing chest presses, like rows on our Smith machine, reverse lunges, anything at all. We just kind of do reverse band benching, reverse band work on pretty much all movements. There's ways to set it up in some degree for almost anything. And then also you can do single limb eccentrics, meaning I might, like say I'm doing pull downs, like we have a machine for pull downs, meaning that if I pulled on just the right side of the handle, the whole machine moves balanced anyhow. So you don't, it's not like a cable where if I pulled on the right side, the handle would, you know, twist or spin. So on our machine pull down, I'll often have clients, they pull down with both arms, they lower, like raise back up, like let it extend back up only with one arm. So they're going to pull down with both arms, and then a weight they normally would never be able to pull down with one arm, they're going to have to kind of resist the stretch in their lat on the way back up. So you use two arms to get the concentric, but you use one arm to do the eccentric. Now you can do this with the legs as well. You know, do leg extensions, both legs up, one leg down. Leg curls, both legs up or down, whichever whether you're doing a seated or lying machine, but both legs through the concentric, the contraction, and then only one leg through the eccentric or the extension. So single limb eccentrics is a great way to do that as well. And then if you have a training partner, you can do force negatives. And a good example of this would be if you're doing bench press, you do as many as you can. And then once you kind of reach one that you kind of can't do on your own, the spotter would help you to the top. But then you would lower all the way down to your chest. And then you and your training partner will lift it back up to the top. Then maybe you'll try one more depending on how strong you are for benching and how strong your spotter is. But those are kind of like just forced negatives, forced eccentrics, where somebody or something helps you with the concentric, so that way you have to still manage the eccentric on your own. So mechanical change is a great category where you do reverse banding, single limb eccentrics, forced negatives. There's a couple other ones, but those are a couple ideas to start with. Then what we want to look at is there are set and rep schemes that you can change. Two examples, one of them is just a simple rest pause. So if I normally do something at 10 reps and I take a 2-minute break, maybe I'll do 10 reps, I'll rest the weight, I'll pause for just a couple seconds, maybe 3 to 5 seconds, pick the weight back up and try a couple more reps. Now, bigger movements require bigger rests, smaller movements require smaller rests, but if I'm doing like bicep curls, I can get to 10, I can kind of rest the weight at my arms at full extension, take 3 deep breaths, and then maybe I can do 2, 3, maybe even 4 more reps. And so rest pause is a really cool way to do it. One of the ways to set this up in like a monthly program is week 1, just do like say 3 sets of 10 reps. Week 2, do 3 sets of 12 reps, but use the same weight as week 1. You'll likely only be able to get 10 or 11. You'll have to do a small pause and try to get 1 or 2 more to get to that 12 reps. Week 3, you're going to do the exact same weight again, but this time you're going for 3 sets of 14 reps. So you're definitely only going to get maybe 10, 11, maybe even 12. But then you have to rest the weight, pause for a couple seconds, you know, maybe 5, 10 seconds, pick it back up and see if you can get those last couple reps to get to 14. Then week 4 is 3 sets of 16 reps. Again, same weight, and you use mini rest to get to 16, whereas normally you would have only been able to get like 10 that first week. By the 4th week, you might be able to get 11 or 12 out of that same weight, due to the increase of strength, due to the increase of stress created by the technique of rest pause. Another example we have is what's called a high contrast superset. So this one works where if you can change weight very quickly. You wouldn't want to use this on something that's very elaborate to change weight. So if you have a machine, like a selectorized machine that has a weight stack, you just pull a pin and whatnot, that's a really good one to do this with. So you might try something where, depending on the style of the exercise or the machine or whatever, you might do a set of like somewhere between 3 to maybe 8 reps, maybe 3 to 6 reps, something like that. So if I'm doing chest press, maybe I do 5 reps, whatever the heaviest weight I can possibly do for 5 reps. I then drop the weight real quick to something that I think I can do around 20 reps with. So I might do my best effort set of 5, drop the weight, then hurry up and get going again, maybe less than 5 seconds in change of time, like transfer time. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, pull the pin, then I get going again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up to 20 reps. So you have a high contrast. There's something very heavy at the beginning, you drop weight, and then you do something very high rep at the end. That's a great way to piss off the muscles because it's miserable, but it's a fantastic technique. So if you've never tried that, I would highly suggest that. It's a really fun, really good technique. And again, it works really well on selectorized machines. Then the fourth category, the last thing I want to kind of cover is just training frequency. It's a boring one, but it's works. Is just training the muscle on back-to-back days is a great way to create greater muscle damage. I trained my calves 60 days in a row. I did have trouble walking some days, but my calves did grow. But I just wanted to kind of see what they could handle, and I wanted to see if I could get them bigger. I've also trained my upper back in programs where I trained my upper back. I alternated pull-ups one day, rows the next day, and I would do it 4 days a week, like all in a row, Monday through Thursday. And I did that for months, and that was a great way to get my back to grow. I've had clients train their chest 3 days in a row each week. You know, maybe they'll do chest on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe Mondays, you know, chest with back, maybe Tuesdays chest with a little bit of legs, maybe Wednesdays chest with shoulders. You just kind of let it trail along with whatever else you're doing on the other days. But you can train muscles on back-to-back days, and that will absolutely create greater damage. We do this a lot with shoulders for females. If they want to build a shoulder cap, just start every single workout with some weird run-the-rack technique or rest-pause technique of lateral raises. Lateral raises are super nice because they don't aggravate your triceps. They don't aggravate the elbow joints and wrist joints as much. So it's really good for just muscular stress rather than joint stress. But you can just start, you know, 3 workouts a week or 4 workouts a week with some form of lateral raises or bent over lateral raises or front raises. Just something that hits the shoulder cap, and you'll find it grows a lot faster. So if you train it more, it grows more. What do you know? So all of these techniques, they're great ways to create muscle damage. They will only work if your nutrition is working. So you have to know that you're in a caloric surplus consistently throughout the day. You have to know that you have enough protein. And, you know, just kind of be smart about how you're implementing these. You don't need to implement all of them at one time. But these are great ideas that you can use to create greater amounts of muscle damage if you are struggling to do so, if you're struggling to get growth change in your muscles, whether that's shape or extra tissue. So I hope this was helpful. If you have any questions about it, just email us. Like I said, I'm always available to help. And then I'll help you put it in your programming, or I'll help you with just some suggestions. But I hope this was helpful. Hope it was interesting. And if you need anything, I'm always here. Cool. Well, if you like today's podcast or the podcast in general, please share it. The more people we share the podcast with, the more people can help. That's the main goal. That's what we want to do this for. I just want to help people live their healthiest and happiest lives. And you can help by sharing the podcast. So thank you very much. Thank you to the patrons of the podcast, the people who financially support the podcast through the Podbean platform and through the podcast donation link we have on our Instagram homepage. The podcast is well over $1,000 a year, so we really appreciate the financial help. It's only through the help of the patrons that we're able to do this every day. So thank you very, very much. Also, if you like the information we share in our podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Champ. If you have any questions, feedback, suggestions, anything that you want to know, let us know at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.